Special edition.
Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Not the Special Edition with me, Miles, and with Kit.
Hi.
Yay!
Yay!
It's the cult sci-fi, fantasy and horror sometimes as well podcast that's coming into your ears right now. I've just told Kit the existence of a Jennifer Aniston film called Just Go With It.
Yeah, I didn't know that had happened.
Did you? Do you like Jennifer Aniston rom-coms?
No.
Then you'll hate this one. Recently seen. Alright, I'll get the last fucking note in.
Clap.
Hey. Hey. Okay, recently seen. Go, you've seen some of it.
I've seen, unusually for me, because I've normally not seen anything at this stage in the podcast. I saw Interstellar, which is perfectly...
It's relevant to this podcast,
yeah.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah, I didn't do it for you. I did it for me.
No, I don't care then.
Yeah. For those of you, everyone probably knows what it is now because it's been out for ages, but Matthew McConaughey not taking his shirt off in a film.
In which case, I have no interest.
Yeah, and it's utterly brilliant, really. Modern space drama sort of thing with loads of weird science bits in it, which I didn't really understand a lot of, but then again, it seems to be that loads of people don't know what it's going on. In fact, to the extent that there exists a book, which is called The Science of Interstellar.
Which Seriously?
Yeah, it's about...
This thing has elicited an entire text.
Yeah, it's about 200 pages long, like big picture book with... someone's gone through and explained how all the science that's used in it is like based on real theories and that sort of thing.
Wow.
That's sort of besides the point. But as a film, works really well. I mentioned a couple of podcasts ago that 2001: A Space Odyssey is one of my favourite films, and there's lots of nice little nods to it without it being a rip-off. There's just a couple of points where he's about to sort of, again, trying not to do spoilers or anything, but he's travelling through a certain space phenomena, and there's sort of, the visuals are bright coloured lights and, flashing imagery and moving shapes and that sort of thing. Much like the final sequence of A Space Odyssey. And it sort of cuts back to his face, and it's a freeze frame of him, his face in a sort of grimace, which is virtually exactly the same shot as is used in A Space Odyssey. But like I say, at no point does it seem cheap. Okay. It's just like a nice little nod to it.
Chris Nolan doesn't wander on with like a bone and go, huh?
No. It's actually a lot more subtle than I just made it seem.
By the way, have you spoiled it? Is that the end?
No.
Oh, good.
No.
I've heard the end, and actually from reviews and from, I think Stephen Will back along, they talked about it as well, and said the ending didn't quite do it for them.
I think, at least one of them.
But.
Oh, okay. I thought the ending was very satisfactory, actually. It was a sort of space drama, but it was also like human drama as well. Like they did sort of the element of family, and that was very important in it. I thought it was quite touching at the end, actually. If I go into it, I will reveal stuff which would probably spoil it. I think it's new enough that I don't want to spoil people's experience of it if they haven't seen it yet. For a film that's just shy of 3 hours, I don't think they wasted any, no scene seemed over long.
That's remarkable.
Yeah, which is quite good. Yeah, what can I say about it? Parts of it are very convoluted. I'd imagine it will benefit from rewatches. And there was proper tense bits in it. It were, like heart pounding stuff. And you really sort of, the characterisation was such that you're really rooting for them as well. Excellent film.
Okay, I definitely am going to check it out. I haven't seen it yet because I missed it on this theatrical run, and I really want to see it on a big screen. You watched it at home viewing, I guess.
I watched it at home. I guess that's a standard size screen now,
42-inch.
Yeah, so it's something like that. Yeah. I would imagine that it would benefit from a cinema screen, but it didn't seem. Sometimes things which are highly visual don't translate so well to the small screen. Mm. But this certainly didn't seem to suffer from that.
Oh, okay. Is that Gravity? Did you see Gravity at all?
I haven't seen Gravity.
Well, now I wouldn't bother because I saw it in the cinema. Astounding.
Yeah.
But it's that sort of thing that begs a theatrical experience. Home movie, I don't think, would do it justice whatsoever. Alfonso Cuarón clearly built that thing to be seen on a giant screen in 3D. Incredible. Made me do actually feel motion sickness.
Really?
It's just ridiculous. Right. I don't get it in vehicles, but I got it watching that.
Oh, right.
Okay, that's good. I'm definitely going to watch it at some point. I'll run through mine. As for the current theatrical release, Hotel Transylvania 2. I took the weasels along to see that recently. It's an animated family film featuring a sort of cast of classic Universal monsters like Dracula, Frankenstein. It rattles along at a pretty good pace. It's stuffed full of jokes. It's got quite a bit of heart to it. I mean, my son laughed his dick off.
Yeah,
so that was handy. Well, don't take that literally. No. I was not in A&E, no cursing, whoever the filmmakers are. It's fine. It's actually not a bad little film, really. The ending's a little bit fudged, but it's, as I said, its heart's in the right place. And you don't have to have seen the first one, which is handy, because haven't. Yeah. Also, I finally caught up with Let the Right One In, which is... Go on.
Is that the original or is that the remake?
The original, yes. Right, okay, yeah. The remake's Let Me In.
Oh, of course it is.
Let the Right One In. Have you... Thomas Alfredson's...
No, I know about it because of the book, but I haven't seen the film.
All right. Well, yeah, vampire film in 2008. I'm ashamed I've only just got around to it, really. It's much lauded. Tells the tale of a young, somewhat lonely boy and the friendship he cultivates with a vampire. And that's all the plot I'm going to give because I don't want to ruin it because it's superb.
Okay.
I genuinely think it's... fantastic film.
Okay.
And I don't want to be that sort of that Johnny Come Lately wank who now insists everyone else must see it because I've only just seen it, but I think you really would do yourself a favour by seeking it out. Incredibly, I paid 75 pence for it in local CEX. After watching it, I was so annoyed that I'd paid so little for it. I want to go back there and give them another like £9.25.
You could always send like a postal order to the producers of the film.
Yeah. No, I don't give it a go.
Don't do that.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's got this sort of real underplayed minimalist vibe to it. The whole thing is set on this sort of snowy, like poverty-stricken apartments. So it's got that sort of Soviet bloc kind of feel to it.
Mm.
And there's absolutely no glamour to this sort of vampire existence. And in fact, it's just that. It's an existence which is stripped of all the fantastical, the gothic, the ethereal sort of normal trope of the vampire film, and it's presented, you know, vampirism is presented almost as a disease.
Okay.
And that sounds bleak. Yes, it is. but it's made with such a sort of delicate sympathy to its main characters. It's hard not to be anything other than utterly compelled by it. Yeah, I think the very best horror actually uses tropes to play on our real fears. You know, Rosemary Baby plays on paranoia, pregnancy, The Babadook, as I mentioned all the time, uses like German expressionism and silent horror films to portray depression and grief. And Let the Right One In is about isolation, loneliness, companionship. And it's a really cracking vampire tale to boot. Brilliant film.
Can I talk about Antichrist?
Please do.
Because that just made me think about something. As you know, I'm not a big horror fan.
Mm.
I saw Antichrist about a year ago and... thought it was, I mean, it gets on the back of the DVD and it gets sort of labelled as a horror film. I don't think it is in any way, but if it is, then that's does exactly what you just said. It's not scary, it's certainly unsettling for various reasons, but it's a film that is about, if it does unsettle an audience, and if that is the function of a horror film, then it does it by playing on, it's essentially about grief, and later it uses that as a platform to deal with other issues, and arguably the main one of which is sort of sexual hysteria. It's very, very interesting film.
Lars von Trier, isn't it?
Lars von Trier, yeah. Visually stunning. The music in it is fantastic as well.
I saw the first 20 minutes. I don't think I was quite ready for it.
No. There's no two ways about it. It's a brutal film.
Yeah, and I'd only recently had children, and I don't want to sound like one of those wankers, like, oh, you wouldn't know. Only a parent would understand this, but... that sort of tragedy was unpalatable at the time.
No, I can understand why you switched it off, because it's not fun viewing.
Nothing jaunty about it, I'm sure.
But it's certainly, like, to me, it had more of a vibe of sort of, you know, what it probably actually is, which is like European art house film rather than, you know.
I'll watch it. Well, going from fantastic horror then to pretty bloody crap horror, it's 2014's Dark House. Directed by Jeepers Creepers director Victor Salva. It's one of the most generic horror films I've ever seen.
Right.
Its drawer, I suppose, is Tobin Bell. He features in it of Jigsaw fame.
Oh, yeah, of course.
The film series. He's sort of wearing a lank wig in it. I didn't hate it, but I really didn't like it. It's not scary. It features these villains, which are these sort of lurching, leaping marauders with scythes. There's a big group of them, so it's hard to be scared, I think, by a big group, unless it's specifically zombies. It's just the way they pelt after the cast, it's just plain daft.
Mm.
If it was a first effort, I think I would applaud the minor facets of the film that I actually thought had something going for them. There's sort of a town with secrets. But they never extend on these things. There's evil foreboding, sense memories. That's perfectly fine, but the plot's a mess. It's just frankly a bit dull.
Mm.
I got it free with a magazine subscription, and I finally broke the seal after about 6 months of it kicking about the house.
Nice, yeah.
Unfortunately, I've thrown away the cover, so I can't sell it.
Oh.
That's forever in my collection.
Well, you probably wouldn't be able to sell it to anyone after that.
No! Buy my film. It's shit. sticking again with horror. Actually, no, it's not horror at all, sorry. But it's a notable horror director, Dario Argento's Cat O'Nine Tales.
Okay.
Italian giallo and horror director, low on logic, big on bold colour palettes, and he has extraordinary visual flair. I've always said about him, he could make a 90-minute Jimmy Nail monologue and make it beautiful.
Yeah.
Astonishing visual style. But Cat O'Nine Tales, sadly, it's fairly average.
Okay.
This is a mystery thriller, to the point where, with the killer reveal, I'd actually forgotten who the character was. He's since gone on and said it's one of his most disappointing films. I don't think it's that bad. It's got a fantastic, great mood and style, which in his films is arguably often more important. And the Morricone sort of tobacco and corduroy jazz spy score is terrific.
Okay.
It's almost worth the price of entry itself. And I also rewatched Tenebrae, because Tenebrae. Yeah. And finally, 1988's Maniac Cop from Arrow Blu-ray, which is almost as stupid, dumb and fun as it sounds, but not quite. But it's it's good fun. Oh yeah, the cop did it.
Oh right, yeah. Good. But it's about time. Dario Argento.
Mm.
The only ones I've seen are Suspiria and The Bird with Crystal Plumage.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
I don't know, what did you think?
Bird with Crystal Plumage, amazing. Mm. Utterly brilliant. Suspiria, probably his most well-known film.
Mm-hmm.
I was disappointed by it. I loved the visuals, but there was something, it certainly didn't grab me as much as Bird with Crystal Plumage did.
Mm.
But I when I watched Bird with Crystal Plumage, it was one of those, I hadn't intended to watch it, they were just showing it late at night. I started watching it and I sort of was a bit spellbound by it, really.
Yeah.
Suspiria, again, it suffered slightly from the fact that I'd probably been building up to watching it for years because people had been recommending it to me.
I did exactly the same as Suspiria, yeah.
Really?
I think I've watched it since, and I do like it. But yeah, you're right. Crystal Plumage, I think, is a genuinely terrific film. Cat and Nine Tails is actually the film he made after it, which is, I think, why it's all the more slightly disappointing. But it's in no way a bad film.
Mm.
But yeah, Plumage, absolutely fantastic. And Deep Red, of course, I think is work of genius. Twisted, dark, macabre genius, but genius nonetheless.
Have you seen Barbarian Sound Studio?
No, still haven't.
Mm, because the only reason I mentioned that, we'll probably watch it at some point and we can talk about it at length. I'm fairly certain it's about it's about an English person who goes to work in an Italian film studio where they record the Foley for horror films.
Oh, right.
And the guy that's... I'm almost 100% certain that the guy who's supposed to be the director is, you know, a pastiche of Dario Argento.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, anyway, we'll talk about that another time.
We shall. And indeed, I should give a little plug here to Movie Matters Podcast again, because they cover a lot of giallo or gialli on their podcast, and very well they do it too. Astonishingly good and warm and friendly and knowledgeable. And frankly, I fucking hate them. I don't. Love you guys.
I must check them out or something.
Yeah, and of course we've often been watching Doctor Who, but I'm going to save that for another podcast.
Yeah, okay.
But,
I've been watching.
You've been watching Doctor Who.
I have, yeah.
That's weird. Okay, no, actually, why are you here? Come on, because you're not the Who fan.
I'm not as much as you. I've watched I've got very little experience of the pre-relaunch ones.
The classic series.
Yeah.
Parlance.
Okay, yeah. See, I don't even know the right terms to use. But I've watched all of it since Christopher Eccleston and have enjoyed it, but with probably waning interest. Yeah, this first couple of episodes of this series, quite light, nicely dialogue-based. Third episode, probably didn't enjoy it so much. But did you watch it?
Yes, yeah. Very much the classic, what we know in the fandom as a base under siege story.
Yes.
And I did enjoy, for those, I always enjoy them for the duration, but they've got very little rewatch value.
Mm.
When it's done, it's done. It's very much a sort of fast food level of Doctor Who. It's absolutely fine.
Well, that's the problem, because with the Eccleston and the Tennant ones, I'd all the time I was thinking, well, I will rewatch this at some point, because I just thought it was very well written and it had like high emotional content as well.
Yes.
And then it's not that Matt Smith's the problem. I thought that it seems like since then the storylines haven't grabbed me as much. So, but again, I am the casual fan. I probably should.
No, this is incredibly interesting for me. So do you know the background scenes as to what production staff have changed since Matt Smith's tenure? Do you know anything about that?
No, that's the thing. I'm very...
Amazing then that you should pick up on that, the level of emotional interest, because since Tennant left, Russell T Davies, head writer, they all left at the same time, basically, and then The Good Ship Doctor Who is now piloted by Stephen Moffat,
right,
of Sherlock and Coupling and whatever else. And one of the main criticisms by fandom is that he takes it in this much more sort of esoteric, but emotion-free... It just doesn't have the heart it used to. And for you to have picked up on that as a casual fan is very revealing, that, really. It speaks volumes.
Okay, yeah. I guess that is quite interesting that you said that. And the other thing I seem to... Since that change has happened as well, the other thing that I tend to pick up on is that... I can't tell whether it's... Sometimes it seems like a nod to another film or whatever, and sometimes it seems like, are they ripping that off? Like, there's constant references to Star Wars.
All right.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of one now, and I can't. It's just dreadful. And I just like quite often I'll be watching it, and I'll think that bit's from that film. Again, off the top of my head, I cannot come up with an example, which makes me sound terrible. But they made a reference to it in the. There was an episode last year, or it might have been one of the special. It might be in the Christmas special where like. Something which looks like a face hugger comes down from the ceiling, and then I was like, really, are you actually doing that? But then he's like, one of the other characters goes, oh, it's just like the film Alien, and it's so sort of a bit self-referential, which I think meant they got away with it, I guess.
Yeah, that's very brazen level of cribbing, I think. Really, we will do a full-blooded Who special at some point later on as the series develops, and we'll probably try and get back Stephen Will and because they know their shit.
Okay.
Right, let's move on. Bang! Quiz. Good. I was trying to do Altered Beast on the Mega Drive.
Oh, no, I don't know what that is. Well, I know what it is. I don't know.
Okay. Right, okay, this is a quiz, and I haven't quite come up with a name for it yet. I was either going to call it Great Movie Mistacks, or Goofs, Bloopers, and Wow Wow.
Nice.
Might go for that one.
I like that, because the first one, it's like, oh, it would work more if you were looking at it in the page. Second one, obviously, relies on the sound of your voice.
Which is the principal medium in which we are working, is it not?
Yes, it is.
Okay, let's go for Goops. Oh, for fuck's sake. I've made my own blooper. Goofs, Bloopers, and Wow Wow.
Nice.
Okay. Right. This is a truth... No, it's not, it's actually... It's a lie identity quiz. where I have scaled the heights of IMDb to look for goofs and bloopers on very well-known sci-fi franchises. Franchises? Too much coffee. Hang on. I have scaled...
Is your neck okay?
Right. I have scaled the heights of IMDb to look for... This is a quiz where you got to guess which one is the made-up one.
Right.
That'll do. So there's four rounds, i.e. four films. I'm going to read you out three bloopers, two of which will be correct. One will be the red herring.
Ah, nice.
Okay. Right. Okay, round one, I call Back to the Fuck-Ups.
Bring it on.
A. When Marty hits the final note of Johnny B. Goode, you can hear the note being sustained with a vibrato, yet Marty isn't applying any.
I would imagine that is true.
Wait until you...
Okay.
B. The film is set in 1955. The Pepsi thermometer just inside the door of the diner was first produced in 1956. I sure hope someone got fired over that fucking blunder. Okay, or is it C? In several shots, Mayor Goldie Wilson is seen clutching an iPad whilst masturbating over squirting videos on YouPorn. Only he does so with his left hand, when he has clearly been established earlier in the film as a right-handed man. One of those is false. Which one?
Do you know, I can't tell.
No.
It's so close to call. I think it might be C.
No, it's the Pepsi thermometer. No, you're right. It is C. Okay. Yeah. Well, right. Round two. Alien, 1979.
Yes!
A. When the crew is sharing a meal after Kane regains consciousness, Parker is shown to be talking. The shot changes to show the crew from a closer angle, and although we can still hear Parker speaking, he is shown to be laughing softly and not speaking at all. 6 out of 8 people found this interesting. B. How did Jonesy, a cat, close the locker door from behind him when he was hiding during the initial alien search? C. At the 23-minute mark, there's a full 30 seconds of 1980s Saturday morning children's magazine show going live with Trevor and Simon swinging their pants, where the editor had accidentally taped over the footage, having forgotten to take out the black plastic tab on the cassette and somehow travelled forward in time to do so.
Do you know what?
Yeah.
I thought this quiz was going to be more serious.
You are sadly mistaken, sir. Which one?
Oh, shucks. I just don't know. It's C.
It's C. Okay, you're going for mostly C's.
Mostly C's.
Right. 3. Ang Lee's Hulk. A. When the Hulk pulls the poodle from the windshield of Betty's car, the entire windshield is smashed. The next view of the car shows only a hole on the driver's side of the windshield.
Oh, my goodness.
B. When Hulk is falling from the fighter jet, he falls through several thick layers of clouds. When we see him hit the water, there are no clouds in the sky. Or is it C? Ang Lee's Hulk is unwatchable shit from start to finish.
Oh, poor Ang
Lee. And is that technically a blooper?
Well, you could.
It's a fuck up, isn't it?
The whole film is a blooper.
Yeah. Okay, you going for C on that one?
I am, yes. Okay. Funnily enough.
All right, round 4. Mad Max 3 Beyond Thunderdome, or as I call it, Beyond Blunderdome. Except I can't do that joke because the Simpsons already did it. A. The girl who spins the wheel with Max's hand looks directly at the camera as it zooms in on Max. Fucking bitch. B. When Max walks in the desert, we see him holding the monkey at his chest. However, when he abruptly falls, there is no sign of the monkey jumping from him, but we then see it alive and safe at the children's cave.
Oh dear.
Fuck's sake. God, it's unwatchable. C. There's an audible line fluff by Gibson at the 20-minute mark, where instead of saying, let's get these kids to safety, Max says, I hate I'm an arsehole who hates I'm going to bleep that. I'm going to bleep the fuck out of that. what's your guess on that one?
Do you know what? I'm going to just say that I prefer the second Mad Max.
Well, thanks ever so much. 4 out of 4.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad it's the first quiz that I've won at.
Yeah, well done. Yeah, have a little ceremony.
Yay. What do I win?
Oh, nicely carried on. What a transition.
Yes.
Oh,
I can
tell you're a muso. People use that phrase still.
They do, yes. There's a debate as to whether to have an S or a Z.
What?
Oh, in like the word.
Muso.
Yeah, I think surely S.
I'm thinking S, yeah.
But yeah.
Z seems way too American.
Yes.
But I do love America and all its cultural themes.
Or yes.
What?
Bad pun, but yeah.
Why are we covering Die Another Day? I haven't really even told you. Do you know why we're covering Die Another
Day? Is there a relevant reason?
There is, because we're coming up to the release of Spectre, Daniel Craig's 4th outing as Bond.
And oh yes.
I thought I'd cover the last 4th outing as Bond, that being Pierce Brosnan's eventual swan song, as it turned out.
Yeah.
Die Another Day.
Yeah.
And I've got to the theory.
Go on. Die a little inside while you're watching the film.
Well, there you've shown your early hand. Just what you think
sorry,
of it.
I'm so
that's
terrible.
Absolutely fine.
Terrible,
released in 2002, it was the 20th official Eon production. It was the 40th anniversary of James Bond, Dr. No, being done in 1962. Mm. Directed by Lee Tamahori off of Once Were Warriors fame, and now subsequently gone to do, I think, Triple X films and the like. It is not a popular Bond film amongst fans. Now let's find out why that is. Why, Kit? You've already shown your hand. You dislike this film. Why?
Yeah, I do.
What's your beef, man?
I wasn't even really aware I had a beef until you insisted that I rewatch it, and then I sort of I remember watching it probably when it came out, you know, and I was younger. I probably watched it and it maybe went over the top of my head a little. I always used to watch the films when they were showing them like back to back on ITV for like 3 years in a row or something like that. So it probably just seemed like another instalment at the time. But now, watching this, you know, with a purpose, where do you start? You know? Well,
can I start with your level of Bond fandom, if I may, then?
How
do you see yourself as a Bond fan? Are you even a Bond fan? Do you?
I wouldn't cast myself as one. There are some films, some Bond films that I really like. You Only Live Twice is...
We've discussed this previously, haven't we?
Yeah, yes. Is actually one of my favourite films, Bond or not.
Yeah.
I like the Connery ones because they've got that sort of spy noir vibe to them a little bit more. I very much dislike the Roger Moore ones because I think they're just camp nonsense. But
the very same reason I love them.
So there's a few that I like for, you know, for various reasons. But
okay, so you don't feel that level of sort of fan proprietorship over the franchise or entitlement to be served up a good Bond film every time you see one. You don't get outraged if it fails to meet your unreasonably high level expectations then?
No, I've watched all of them. I've always given you one a try, although I don't go see them at the cinema. Yeah, so I guess I'm a casual observer, but I wouldn't go as far as to describe myself as a fan.
Okay, fair enough. So almost conversely to that, I am a huge Bond fan.
I've noticed.
to the point where I wrote what Americans might call a college paper
or
my university dissertation on James Bond films. Yeah, that's why I'm such a worthwhile employee and I've got really far in the world of careers. Yeah, and I've seen most of the films theatrically, read all the books, I think. I think Spy Who Loved Me, I've never read that because it's ostensibly not really a Bond book, so I'm bothered. I've seen all the films multiple times, I enjoy them very, very much. So, and again, this film, you know, I dislike. But let's go back to you. As the non-Bond fan, why do you dislike Die Another Day? What is it about that film that fails in your eyes?
Well, it's interesting you should say that because...
Only.
Sorry! Brilliant. Nice.
Way too late to make that joke. No. Way too late.
I liked it. You can just edit it together so
it's not going to work. No. leave this bit in.
It's weird because, like as I just said, I'm not really a Bond fan. But part of the reasons it started to annoy me instantly was because of the way that it sort of played with Bond conventions. In the theme at the start,
the Madonna song.
Yeah, the Madonna song is dreadful.
How dare you?
There's like the Bond, the theme, you know, whatever it is, the ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
When he's like going through something like that. And they've put like this dance beat over the top of it while he's doing something. It's like, oh, we're trying to be so super modern kind of thing.
Funny, there is a theory that goes that actually, oh, fuck me, Bond is 40 years old property now and there are new things like Triple X coming along and Stealing Its Thunder and shit, how do we make this relevant and young again to people? Like they always do. They always try and ride the popular culture wave Bond film. Where Bond once led in the 60s, now it kind of trails behind it. Oh, it's always done. I mean, that's why we've got a reboot with, you know, Craig following the Bourne formula, ostensibly. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think there is definitely a sense of that in this film that, shit, this is old. How do we catch up? Hence the CGI, hence the shit gadgets in it.
Yeah,
and the shit techno music, whatever it is.
Yeah, what's the first scene? Is he's like surfing or something like that? There's a wave.
Weird, isn't it?
And he's surfing along it, and it's like he's being cool, he's surfing or something like that. It fails for two reasons. One, it just looks dreadful, and secondly, it's like if you're going to choose something from popular culture to do it, don't choose surfing, which, you know, the surfing boom happened in the 50s and 60s, you know, and then you're trying to do that to make it seem modern. But I don't know.
Yeah, there are certain things I don't think Bond should be seen doing. Revenge porn and, you know, shanking being one of them. But yeah, certainly. Surfing, it doesn't fit. When you see him skiing, that makes sense because the upper class is, they always go on skiing jaunts, things like that, and it fits the character.
That works. The whole skiing thing works really well because you don't have to suspend your disbelief, as the cliche
it's
goes.
One of his natural climates is the Alps and things like that. And similarly, in View to a Kill, they tried to get him to do some snowboarding. Didn't it was appalling. When they had it to the background of a Beach Boys song, I forget which. That film does very much try to recapture some of its youth market. What did you think of the virtual reality scenes?
Oh, where he's got the headset on.
Headset, yeah.
Interestingly enough, that didn't bother me too much.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why. It didn't stick out to me, and I thought the bit at the end where Moneypenny's got it on, I thought it was quite funny. Like, it didn't really bother me. Like, does it?
Yeah,
bothers you?
Yeah, it was one of those things where I had to turn away. So embarrassed was I? Yeah. Bond films have always existed in an out universe, which is fairly implausible, but not completely unbelievable. And I think that's a very strong recurrent theme throughout this film, is that everything is slightly too far-fetched. And I say this as someone who likes Moonraker. And I do. But everything is too far-fetched in this film. It's utterly unbelievable. Skiing? What is that? He's surfing again on ice later.
Yeah, because
he's got an invisible car.
The invisible car, that's the thing. I knew it was, you say you object to the like virtual reality headset thing, but surely that's just a prelude to the nonsense that is the invisible car.
All of it, I think, only serves to make the film much, much weaker. And also, I just don't think they go with a consistent tone in this film. And as I've always said about all Bond films, is pick a tone and run with it. That's why I like Moonraker. It's silly and it's stupid and it knows it is, and I think it's fun with it. This doesn't work because we have this real disconnect with these horrendous torture scenes at the beginning and through the title sequences, and it's actually not a, again, it's a plausible, I think, setup for a plot, and then it goes to fucking bug nuts crazy town in the second half.
I was going to say virtually identical to what
right,
you just said, because I thought when it does show him like he's finally got captured, it's like the opposite of a training montage. You know, he's sort of getting, his hair's getting longer, and he's getting beaten up. And when I saw that, I thought this is actually a pretty good premise for one. You know,
yeah.
it shows a weakness, and then it shows like how can he get out of this, and then of course it's just got this thing of, oh, you know, I've been held captive for 18 months, I think it's supposed to be. He's just sort of, you know, goes back to the MI5 hospital or whatever it is. And then he's just like, oh, back on it. No fucking psychological evaluation needed for me.
Can't imagine they'd let him back on the field after 9 months in enemy territory either.
But that's partly, I'm going to talk about Skyfall later on. But
I think there's a very good mirror image of the two films there. Perfectly, in fact, because one's a 40th anniversary thing, and it feels like it's written by committee. It feels like it's written to please fans, as opposed to Skyfall, which actually they've taken one story, and there's a couple of little kisses to the past, clearly, in there. But it's very much its own beast, and a frankly far superior film as a result. And yeah, again, it's got Bond sort of out of service and
needs rehabilitation,
yes,
sort of thing. But it's far more plausible, and the whole thing of, like, they don't let him back into... You know, or actually, you find out later in the film he failed his psych evaluation. It shows, you know, you feel like you're constantly riding on the edge of, is he going to be able to pull this off? The problem with the Die Another Day Bond, and with probably a lot of Bonds, is that at no point does it feel like Bond can fail.
No, there's an utter invulnerability to him.
And I know that's what some people like, but it doesn't work for me as a film.
No.
You know?
I like my Bond strapped to a bottomless chair having his bollocks whacked by a rope.
Do you know what? The time I saw that scene, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I was like, is this really in this Bond film? Because I hadn't read the book.
Ah, right, okay.
You said, I remember speaking to you about it, and you said that scene is like, you know, pretty much verbatim. Yeah, it's quite literally cringeworthy. It is so horrible to watch. Yeah, and just, you know, however many times he sort of swings that weight, it must be like 6 or 7 times or something. Oh, just horrible.
And you get a minor feeling of that in the opening credits of Die Another Day, and that he's really suffering throughout. Instead of semi-naked women, you have your main character being tortured.
Well, the problem is it's being masked by that terrible song, so you can't really take it as seriously. But
Many people cite Halle Berry as a major drag factor in the film. I think she's just kind of there.
There's been several Bond women that have filled that same role of, you know, I turn out actually to be, you know, a highly trained person or that sort of thing. As with a lot of the performances in it, you know, I could probably take it or leave it. I don't really like that when they first meet each other, they do a little flirting exchange, which, to be honest, probably just made me feel uncomfortable.
It felt so queasy. It's
queasy, isn't it?
Yeah, and then of course we get a sex scene, which is the first time you've ever seen in a Bond film.
When I was watching it, I thought this seems, without it being actually genuinely explicit, it was reasonably explicit.
Yeah.
Whereas normally, you know, I, the image that I've got in my head is like, you know, of him like undoing a zipper or something, and then it cutting to a, you know, after scene, which is, you know, like quite classic cinema.
It's much more classy. Yeah, we knew what was going to happen. Thanks ever so much, Bond. But yeah, now this time we get a full flesh gripping, sweaty sex scene.
Yeah, it's
really grim. And yeah, that conversation they have, I can't imagine any woman really going for that unless she fancied the fucking arse off of the bloke making those lewd innuendos. It's horrible.
No,
it's he's having the mojitos on the beach.
It's like he's just finished reading FHM magazine.
Here's some tips to get them wet in the right area. Things I quite liked in the film, I thought Toby Stevens's Gustav Gross was quite an entertaining presence in a film that's already smashed the boundaries of reality and believability. I thought that was quite fun. Ridiculous and absurd, no, don't get me wrong, but I just thought he knew what kind of film he was making and just went for it.
Yeah, actually, he sort of, he weirdly manages to underplay it a little bit in a film in which everything is sort of grotesquely extravagant. Aside from the fact he's wearing like a jetpack for the second, or whatever it is, for not a jetpack.
Yes.
That bodysuit thing.
But actually, his sword fight with Brosnan, I thought was terrific. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I mean, again, ruined by the presence of Madonna herself. Is it prior to it or after? I forget which way around. But the sword fight, absolutely fantastic. I thought a genuinely brilliantly directed scene.
Yeah.
It served more or less no function whatsoever other than to be a big, flashy action set piece. But that's fine.
It didn't really do it for me. But
so the stakes, such as they were in the film, what were they again? It's a big satellite.
He had a big laser.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he wanted to. No.
What was he fucking doing?
Because he's supposed to be a North Korean general.
That's right.
He wanted to unite Korea. And when he said unite, he basically meant the North to take over the South.
Mm-hmm.
And he was trying to carve a path so that his troops could go through the American minefield to get to the south.
Yes,
that seemed like he was... Sounds like something out of Austin Powers, doesn't it? A giant laser.
Yeah, it's...
If you've got that power, probably do something else with it than just...
I think if you're going to use a real-world threat like North Korea, perhaps use it a little more subtly.
That's the thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's Team America.
It's a film, you know, which... With actually, again, that goes back to the whole Bond gets captured thing. It's quite a good setup. It's actually a culturally relevant beginning, you know, like, oh, this is, you know, he's in North Korea, political situation or whatever. And then they do something dreadful and comic book-esque with it, sort of.
Desmond Llewellyn wasn't in this one. He was unfortunately passed by that time. But I've completely forgotten John Cleese's appearances in the two of the Brosnan films.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
And I'm a Cleese fan in so far as I love 40,000, Monty Python, and Clockwise, which is very good. But he's fucking rubbish in these. It's embarrassing. And I think one of the quotes, actually, we'll do some feedback later, but there's very good quote from John Arnold. He said, if you listen carefully, when the invisible car makes its non-appearance, you can hear the producers sigh, fucking hell, this really needs a reboot now.
Mm.
And John Cleese's performance is another button on that more or less turd that is this film. And I completely concur.
Precisely one of the reasons why this Bond needed the Daniel Craig reboot.
Mm.
And it makes me, again, you know, you made it's a sort of mirror image of Skyfall. The whole thing of Q in Skyfall is just like computer nerd who gives him a gun and a radio.
Yeah,
I love that scene in Skyfall because it's one of many, many bits where it's almost like sticking two fingers up to the conventions of Bond, but in a good way. Mm. Like it sort of says, no, this is what we're about now.
But Bond films have always done the excess and then bring back down to earth the next one. And actually, I think the number fourth in a series, that I'm going to argue, establishes that formula, because the third tends to typify that era. I think if you get the third on Sean Connery's, which is Goldfinger, which everyone thinks is one of the standard classic Bond films, and then you get Thunderball, which is kind of like a shit version of Goldfinger.
Mm.
That is a really shit version. I hate Thunderball. That's personally my least favourite Bond film. And then, of course, you get, with Roger Moore, you get Moonraker, which I like, but it's The Spy Who Loved Me, the previous, again, it's like the nexus point of the Moore era, and that which most people celebrate. I think people say The Spy Who Loved Me, oh yeah, that's the best Bond film. they're a bit wrong, but nonetheless, it's certainly the one that combines all the elements to make it the most successfully, I think, retrospectively.
Mm.
And then you get Moonraker, which I think tries to amplify all those elements to arguably a lesser degree. I enjoy it, but I'm not going to make the case that it's a great film. And then again, you get this one here, Die Another Day, the fourth one. And again, previously you had The World Is Not Enough, which is not a great film, but actually it's not bad. But GoldenEye is definitely his best film.
Yeah, there's bits in The World Is Not Enough that I quite like. Robert Carlyle in it.
Yeah.
I thought that he played the villain brilliantly. You know, you feel for him in bits. He's not this sort of...
he can't do the same, though.
Yeah, that's the joke, isn't it? I thought that worked quite well. He actually played it with a bit of gravity, which was probably unusual for a Bond villain to display the reasons why he's, you know, a bastard or whatever.
I mean, they did that with Trevelyan in GoldenEye, which I still hold up as the best Brosnan film, and actually could be an all-time classic. I think it's a very, very good film, but for the score, which is utterly ruinous. It shows how important the score is to a Bond film. It's by someone, a chap called Eric Serra. Really reedy electronica score, which is a really weird way to herald the return of James Bond to the cinemas. Yeah, what, 6 years after Dalton had last been in it. And I believe there might be a fan edit out there with, like, you know, David Arnold's score later at the top instead. I'm not sure, but I would very much like to watch that film because I think Golden Knight really needs it, because it's a brilliant film otherwise.
It's interesting that you say that, you know, it ruins it, but yeah, music is so important in films.
Hugely, and yeah, thank God for David Arnold, who took over from Tomorrow Never Dies. I think he did Casino Royale. I don't know. Spectre was someone else, but nonetheless, they followed that lineage particularly well.
Yeah.
And it's classic and it's brassy and it's just got a tone that, you know, Eric Serra sadly didn't bring. But then again, I quite like the For Your Eyes Only soundtrack, which is disco. So yeah, I'm nothing if not a massive hypocrite. I mean, ultimately I think Die Another Day suffers from a poor mesh of styles, a story which goes nowhere, ludicrous, unbelievable set pieces. It doesn't have confidence, it has sort of a arrogance to it. I don't know, I feel, because it's self-celebratory and it's also very smug in a way that, you know, Skyfall, which is the 50th release, I don't think is. Some people will do. And again, Skyfall, I think there's some very huge plot holes in that film, but I think you carry along for the duration of the film so well, you don't think of them. Well, I didn't think of them during the time. Afterwards, I can turn around and say, hang on a minute, how did he know that train was going to crash in the exact moment? That didn't make a lot of sense. But during the film, I think if it carries you along that journey, I'm...
Yeah, stuff like that never bothers me if the film is strong enough in its other elements. I've watched, very rarely do I do it, but I've watched Skyfall 3 times. I'd never, ever do this. I watched it like twice within like a week, just because it was on. And again, I started watching it again and it held my attention again. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to sit down and watch it again. Yeah. It just helped because it's such a strong film.
Mm.
Yeah, very, very good.
Yeah, I mean, it engages emotionally, and for that, I can always overlook plot elements. But if I'm looking at plot elements, I think that's a sign that the film is failing. So feedback, shall we do?
Yes,
we got a lot on this. So yeah, we asked people what they thought of Die Another Day, and indeed the Brosnan era as a whole. And fuck ton of people got back in touch. If you want to get in touch, by all means, please do. It's at NotSpecialPod. Or email notthespecialedition@gmail.com. Should we take it in turns? We've got a lot of feedback.
Let's go for it, yeah.
Go.
Okay, so James Gent says, and people say Octopussy is a silly film. GoldenEye was half decent, and it was a policy of diminishing returns after that.
Ooh. Baz Collins, 2 words, shit sandwich. Not only a terrible Bond film, but a terrible film. Phoned in performances from everyone, especially Brosnan, totally lacking any wit or excitement. The previous one was bad but still watchable, this wasn't. Oh, and beats Man with the Golden Gun as having the worst theme song. Also, they should have gone with Samuel L. Jackson's suggestion for Halle Berry's Bond girl name, a Cinnamon Buns.
They should definitely have done that. I love, that's a brilliant comment for so many reasons. That bit about phoned in performances from Brosnan, I just thought, like, you know, we were talking about the surfing scene earlier. I thought, like, you know, and he's got his invisible car or whatever. I just thought Brosnan must have been thinking to himself at the time, what am I doing? What is going on? Still, I mean, you know, at least he got to redeem himself in Mamma Mia.
Did he ever? Actually, apparently he was very keen on doing Casino Royale.
Oh, was he?
He'd always wanted, according to sources, he'd always wanted to do that text as a film, but I think because they saw it as a reboot, they couldn't do it with him.
No.
And various reasons, and I'm sure they would have had to pay him a lot more money than they paid Craig at the time, so
yeah,
makes sense. Source. And always, there's always a huge interest in a new Bond. You might think, well, this star's really bankable, but actually, if you've got a new one, everyone's going to turn up because everyone wants to see what they're like.
It's funny because when you, like at the time, it was like when Pierce Brosnan was Bond, it sort of seemed like, oh, you know, fresh-faced Bond sort of thing, he's going to take it in a new direction, that sort of thing. Mm. And now, because obviously Daniel Craig's done that, but, you know, 10 times more, when you look back at Pierce Brosnan doing it, I don't know, I just get the sense of, I think, it seems so of its time.
It does, but I'm going to defend the era.
Oh, go on.
More in the sense of Brosnan himself, because he's always accused, and he will be accused on this feedback, of being a sort of everyman Bond and not being specific enough to have his own character. But I think it's kind of exactly what they needed in mid-95 with the return of the series. They needed someone who's a bit more generic to just relaunch the series as kind of, because it was the height of Britpop when it was all came back, so everyone was very much celebrating that which made Britain great, and those icons and elements were very much part of pop culture at the time. So I think bringing Bond back and just making this sort of best of chocolate box Bond, as I've always referred to him as, I think it worked actually, and the franchise was built on top of that, and then of course relaunched as we know. But I think it was needed at the time to just have everyone reminded that he could be a bit funny, a bit savage, a bit cool. I think for the time it worked fine. I'm just saying the same things over and over. I've had far too much fucking coffee. Don't let me do that again before we record.
Alright, okay.
I'm blaming you.
This is all your fault. So David Ronin says, it always bugged me that their guns are pointing at slightly different angles on the poster. What the hell are they aiming at? A barn?
To which John Arnold replies, Madonna.
Yay.
Darren Floyd, Brosnan never looked more like Bond than when he was walking through the hotel lobby wet in his PJs, all beardo. Thought the first half, up to the point he meets M in the abandoned underground station, is great. Then, yes, it turns to shit.
The Bond's look, Pierce Brosnan's look with the long hair and the beard and that, I think that looks great. That's probably one of the highlights of the film for me.
He
looks gritty and everything, and yeah, and then he has to go and shave and ruin it.
Shave with one blade. Oh, it's like one electric razor, isn't it? Just the whole lot.
Yeah, that would be a mess of tangles. Paul Kirkley says, all the Brosnan films were pretty awful, though I'll admit my view was coloured by my ongoing man love for Timothy Dalton, but this was the worst. At least the others had decent songs.
I'm with him there on Timothy Dalton. I think he's fantastic. Vulpine Bond, sort of savage, snarling Bond. Not everyone likes him, I know, and he's a quite peculiar looking man, but no way near as weird looking as Daniel Craig, who's clearly quite Mad Magazine.
Dalton really goes for the, like, I'm an upper class Bond sort of thing, doesn't he? Like,
yeah, he hates the one line. He spits them out with a real distaste.
Yeah,
which I like.
I like License to Kill is probably one of my favourites.
Oh really?
I always
liked controversial
it.
Choice.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. I was probably always attracted to the fact that when I started watching them, that it was the only Bond film with a 15 certificate. Yeah.
Indeed, it is, yeah.
Is that because of the shark scene?
No, it's a combination. I think there's threatened sexual violence.
Oh, right.
There's the guy getting his face blown up.
That's horrible.
Yeah,
that's,
well, there we are.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Probably why. It's got a lot of blood in that, really. I couldn't go and see it at the time.
Oh, right.
Yeah, even I was too young. How annoying. Charmaine Lovett, the Brosnan years for me are very similar to Police Academy 3-6 and Jurassic Park 2-3. Everything before and after is great, but you'd wish for temporary amnesia during the rest. Hang on, Charmaine, are you saying Police Academy 7 Mission to Moscow is great? Because it looks like you are.
Well, that's two podcasts in a row we've made a reference to Police Academy Mission to Moscow. Brilliant.
Okay, now, Barnaby Sultan's, do you know how you should pronounce this next quote?
No. You should maybe do it.
Okay, Barnaby Sultan has just put, then maybe you shouldn't be living here! Are you aware of this? Okay,
yeah,
it's It's an Adam and Joe thing.
Okay.
Well, it's not really. It's a Pierce Brosnan film called Taffin, in which Pierce Brosnan stars, and he gives this really bad line reading, which was pretty much identical to what I just did, and it became a meme on their show, and then they'll just keep playing that clip. I'm going to edit it in here. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, okay.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Brilliant.
What the fuck?
I know.
Brilliant. What's brilliant about that is that he doesn't, even though he's going for it like really overblown, he doesn't, it's not a constant crescendo. He does like, he drops slightly and then brings it back up again. It's got a little kink in it.
It's great. They get a whole crowd at Glastonbury out there, remember, to say that.
Really?
I shout it, yeah.
Excellent. Mike Kenwood says, GoldenEye is one of my favourite Bonds. It's one where casting, script, design and direction all come together. Tomorrow Never Dies is a good salvage job, but it runs out of plot halfway through. The World Is Not Enough is on a similar level and rather less than the sum of its parts. But overall, I was quite enjoying Brosnan's 10-year as Bond. It was certainly better than the worst of more years. It was certainly better than the worst of more years when this turned up.
Should we just go from after the first half an hour or so?
Apparently I've lost the ability to read.
That's relevant to the...
All right, okay. After the first half an hour or so, it just degenerates into one mindless video game generating action sequence after another. It's telling that it's the only Bond film that is for sale in Poundland.
Do you know, after he put that, I realised I'd lent you my copy and I hadn't seen it in a couple of months, so I went to Poundland to see if I could buy it. Didn't have it in. But it is on like Daily Motion for free.
So oh, right. Really, oh, okay.
Paul Holmes. Pierce is basically the greatest hits Bond, as we were saying earlier. He takes the best bits of all the others before him and repackaged them into a slightly blander but enjoyable whole. So too did his films, though Die Another Day is basically the Queen's Greatest Hits 3 of the franchise. That's fucking harsh. Sad thing is, it has moments of genuine brilliance. They're just stuck in piles of garbage around them, so never gets a chance to fly.
Yeah, that's, again, like we were saying, good premise.
Good premise.
Korea gets captured and all that, and then just, they don't run with that.
Great sword fight too, love that. I'm the only one who seems to think that's a good sword fight.
Yeah. James Peaty says, GoldenEye is a decent Bond film, and Brosnan's at his best in that one. The other three are increasingly shades of dreadful. Die Another Day is so bad, it made me question whether I actually liked Bond films, and I love Bond films, by the way.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, tellingly, I remember the critical response to Die Another Day, and I didn't see it at the cinema. Which is unusual, because it was the 40th year, and I had a lot going on. I was married that year, so I had a lot going on. Anyway, I had two jobs. So I just not going to get around to it, and it took me ages. I think, do you know, I'm pretty sure I saw Casino Royale in cinemas before I saw Die Another Day.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that must have been awful.
That was a really weird, jarring sort of juxtaposition between the two films.
Well, yeah, because also I think that, you know, like Casino Royale is surely the perfect antidote.
Dave John Roberts, I walked out of the cinema in disgust after the invisible car scene. Still haven't seen it all the way through. Fuck me, walked out.
Yeah, I mean, the invisible car scene is, if anything's going to do it, it's going to be that.
I guess so.
Although maybe, you know, that terrible flirting scene.
Or the Ice Palace, which has electric doors. And I've been into an ice bar, but it's still a building, but built of ice inside, yeah. It's not an entire hotel.
Yeah.
Well, maybe there is such a thing, I don't know.
It was, was that the... And also, there's like a tropical room inside the Ice Palace.
It's got springs.
How does that work? Yeah.
No idea.
And that was that the... It was in the Eden Project, wasn't it? There's people going on about it.
Yeah, but it's not made out of ice.
Yeah. No.
Oh, you mean that was first filmed?
Yeah.
Is that right?
I'm fairly certain the tropical room in Dino...
You're probably right.
Another day is...
The Eden Project.
Room in the Eden Project.
Ooh, I've been to a Bond set.
Yeah.
In a way.
I think so. You'll have to check that. Nick Butler says, its campness kind of made it implode on itself. I'm embarrassed to say I liked Madonna's attempt at a theme tune. She's no Tina, though.
Dean Hercombe, he was the no man's land of James Bond. Not quite as smug as Moore, not quite as charming as Connery, not quite as intense as Dalton, lacked the physicality of Lazenby, and lacked the presence of Craig. Oh, and he never hosted blockbusters like Holness. He counts. Fuck you. Blockbusters. Yeah, Bob Holness calls the first person to play Bond.
Really?
Yes, radio play.
Herbert West, we remember him from last time.
Do we ever?
Says, Madonna's cameo tells you pretty much everything you need to know about Die Another Day. Although the beardy Bond in soaking wet PJs played deadly straight is a great moment. Second person to say that.
Concur.
There's nothing here as egregiously dire as Quantum of Solace. Well, apart from Tomorrow Never Lies, but there is a sea of meh.
Oh dear. Not a sea of meh. I could cope with a swimming pool, or perhaps even just a little paddling pool.
Yeah, but that's a whole sea.
Fuck.
Yeah.
I can't cope with that.
No.
Have you ever seen two seas meet?
No.
Oh, that's not very interesting. Yeah. That's what I have. You just see a little ripple in the water out there. Oh, that's two seas meeting. I don't understand. It's water. How the fuck does that work? Water, as far as I'm aware, pretty much gets on.
Yeah, doesn't it? Just like say, you know.
No, this is two seas having a clash.
Let's have a lovely time.
Speaking of clash, did you notice the clash on the soundtrack?
Yes, it's in the. It's when it goes. When they go back to London.
Goes back to London, yeah.
That's quite unusual, isn't it?
And do you know who the air hostess was? Who?
No.
Roger Moore's daughter.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Rob Stradling, diehard Brosnan cheerleader here, but even I can't defend Die Another Day.
Ian Lambert says, the opening 30 minutes would be pretty good if it wasn't so deliberately mixed and graded so flat in an attempt to make Cuba a bright contrast. And Madge's song was better. But from the moment Berry appears, it's rubbish. It's also slap bang in the middle of we must make a Bond girl a powerful woman, but we can't think how to signify that other than by having her double cross him, period. I hadn't noticed that, but now he's pointed it out about the whole thing of the North Korea scenes being, you know, the colour being drained out of them.
Yeah.
And then the Cuba looks is ridiculously sort of overblown and flowery.
It is, isn't
yeah,
it?
That is interesting, actually.
I wasn't aware that was a technique they'd employed, but now he said it, it makes perfect sense. Let's have some tweets on the go, shall we?
Yeah.
Okay. Stephen Graham at Plop Gazette says, worst film I ever saw at the cinema. Would have fallen asleep if it wasn't so bloody loud. Also, a sex scene in a Bond film, like seeing a cum shot in a carry-on. I did enjoy watching it one subsequent time with a friend who did racist voices whenever a Korean character turned up.
That's nice. Yeah.
Good. Perhaps you'll enjoy the earlier part of the podcast, which is going to be censored. T.M. Gorgon at Knowing Knows, the first Bond film I saw at the cinema, and even then I can't summon enough nostalgia to be positive about it. At Sourdust, it's probably not the worst Bond film ever made. Jason Crawford at Crawford_J says the worst Bond film of the Brosnan era. He still makes it watchable though. It's daft fun. Oh, there we are. Someone who's actually defended it.
Yeah, in the most, the least. Positive way, really.
Mm. Oh, at Sourdust has added, I still don't remember totally hating it on first watch, though, nor do I remember watching it again. Come to that.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, and lastly, Secret Teacher at Time Lord TSE says, Halle Berry is dreadful. Brosnan is acceptable. Invisible Car sucks. Pike is smoking hot. That's it, really.
Two people have sort of said that Halle Berry's performance is questionable in it. I just think, I don't know, she was all right. She didn't stick out as dreadful, which some characters in Bond have done. Mm. You know, you think, why is this person in it? Is it just because they're the famous person at the time, sort of thing?
Yeah, she was nominated for possibly won the Oscar during filming, but it was certainly during that stage from Monsters Ball and things like that. But unfortunately, then she did this. Then she went on to do. Catwoman,
yeah.
Obviously, she did the X-Men films as well, but she was pretty terrible in those too, I seem to remember. I think she just chooses bad parts. I think given the right performance, absolutely fine. Or given the right vehicle, she's fine. But
that's the thing. It's the script that she's delivering is the problem, not her reading of it, I guess.
But I mean, there are some actors I think who can give great performances regardless of what they're in. I just don't think she's one of those people.
That is true. But, you know, they probably can, you know, at the time, wouldn't have been appropriate to cast Owen Wilson as a Bond girl.
New news. Brilliant. News time. Okay, what do you want first?
Whatever's first on your list.
Rick Moranis.
Rick.
Rick Moranis, who played Lewis Tully, a.k.a. Vince Clortho, Keymaster of Gozer. He has stated he's not going to be in the Ghostbusters reboot for next year. He was invited by the producers to have a sort of walk-on one-day part, but he lives fairly far away now from where they're filming.
and he hasn't been retired all these years. He's in fact largely, he's been doing a few bits of voiceover work, but he's largely been looking after his children after his wife died.
Oh.
There we are. He wishes them well, but he's not going to be in it. There we are.
Okay.
Bless him. It's really sweet.
Yeah.
I thought he'd more or less retired and or given up, or just his career's gone to pot, but no, he's just been a lovely family man. Oh, I just want to stroke his little head.
Yeah, and of course, Little Shop of Horrors is great.
Isn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Honey, I'm sure the kids are that great. I don't know.
I remember liking it when I was a child. But mm. I don't think I've seen it since.
Did you cry over the bee dying?
Can't spoilers.
That's that bit of news. And secondly, Class is coming!
Class?
A new 8x45-minute episode Doctor Who spin-off set in the Coal Hill School, which is set in the Doctor Who universe.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about that, yeah.
Where Clara works, and also where Ian and Barbara from the very first series in 1963, they're from. It's going to be on BBC Three. It's going to be directed largely at sort of a teenage audience, so somewhere between the Sarah Jane Adventures and Torchwood, that kind of market. They, unfortunately, they made the announcement like on 11:30 on a weeknight to... it's sad to say, really. I feel a bit sorry for the producers, to a rousing chorus of indifference and disapproval.
Yeah.
Because the Doctor Who official site said, we've got big news coming.
Yeah.
And it is big news in its own way. But it's now, what, the fourth spin-off from... fifth if you include the K-9 Australian series. I think everyone was a bit disappointed that it wasn't like a return of a Doctor or return of missing episodes or just something more significant to do with Doctor Who itself.
Right, yeah. Again, when you aim something at a specific demographic, quite often it sometimes falls flat on its face.
Can do.
I don't know, I'll have to wait and see, won't I?
I'm going to be perfectly honest, I wish it every success going, but I'm not going to watch it.
No.
And it's not out of antipathy. But good luck to it. I'm sure it's going to be absolutely fine. If it does turn out to be some sort of roaring critical success, then I'll be there waving my Class flag like every other Johnny-come-lately twat. I've only just started watching Mad Men. Very good.
Okay, I've watched that.
It's terrific, I highly recommend it. A year after it's finished. And that's all the news.
That's all the news. There wasn't much news this time.
Well, I could Google something if you like.
No, no, it's fine, yes, all right.
And so to close the show, it's a bit of local and music and James Bond news, isn't it?
Well, it would be local news, but they seem to be doing so well for themselves that I think it's probably actually nationally, culturally relevant now.
Well, it is, given that they were featured in the London Evening Standard. Should we say what we're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. So, the Sam Smith song for upcoming James Bond film Spectre has been released to a chorus of boos. It's fucking rubbish. Also, Bristol noise band, and what would you call them?
Actually, I thought, what sort of band should I call them? I thought, anything that I'm going to call them, they're going to hate, because they don't like labels being attached to them. If I say shoegaze, they won't like that.
No.
If I say art rock, they won't like that. They're just a good band.
A good shoegazing art rock noise-making band. Yeah, Spectres, based in Bristol, but actually from right down from Murrurundi in North Devon. It sounds wanky if we say we know a couple of them.
We know one of them quite well.
Yeah. We were in a band with him, were we not?
We were indeed, yes.
Yeah.
And they're doing quite well for themselves, and they've done this because they're called Spectres, and the film is called Spectre. They decided to record their own Bond theme.
Which, whilst a bit indicative of their own output, in a way, in that it's awash with noise and things like that, is far better and much more Bond-like than the fucking Sam Smith song.
I thought it was a great song.
Yeah.
I thought it was good, and you know, they've done all this media thing of, you know, releasing it as if it is the real one and trying to get people to comment on that rather than the actual song.
They recorded a video for it, didn't they, which is sort of slightly Bondy, and them playing sort of, I think one, it's Darren playing a double bass.
I think so.
And of course, we're in suits, and it looks quite classy.
Yeah.
It's got a bit of brass going on there, isn't it, as well?
Or
some sort of orchestral sweep. And it does sound, as I said, a bit like a Bond song. But they also released it on YouTube under the title Sam Smith. What's it called? Writing on the Wall.
Writing on the Wall.
It's on the Wall. And unfortunately, this got to the music editor of the London Evening Standard, was it?
Well, you say unfortunately. I would say
fortunately. Very fortunately.
who went ahead and reviewed it as if it was the Sam Smith song. Give it a very positive review.
Yeah, amazing.
Yes.
And some of the YouTube, some of the comments for it are
terrific.
Truly amazing. I implore anyone who's listening to this to look it up.
It's all along the lines of, what is this dirge? Who are these pricks?
Yeah.
All the stuff that, on which they feed, because they're fairly chipper lads, but they come across on social media as fairly grumpy. It's safe to say. They're kind of like a text version of Marky Smith or something. It's just this...
Oh, Darren's going to love that you said that.
A sort of fairly argumentative... a contrary band, I think.
Yeah.
And they would admit that, I hope. They probably wouldn't, because I've said it. They'll disagree with anything. But yeah, it was brilliant.
Mm.
I think that response. Okay, so see, these are some of the genuine comments under the trolling video that Spectres have put up there, with a picture of Sam Smith next to
it. So, Zora Anjum says... ellipsis, what is this shit?
How many likes has that got?
61 likes.
61 likes.
JDM says, that's not Sam Smith, without the correct use of an apostrophe.
Well done.
Enrique Singh says, fake.
Hey, well done, Enrique.
He worked it out.
He could be James Bond himself with that level of detection.
I'm just looking at his profile picture, and he's got what looks... He's smiling into frame while what looks like an explosion is happening behind him. So maybe he is, I don't know.
Yeah, can you subscribe to that for me, please? Thanks.
Denise Hewitt... whose picture is her playing Saturn an electric keyboard, says, really disappointing and depressing, sad face. Give me Shirley Bassey with the Goldfinger theme anytime, or the more recent brilliant Adele Skyfall theme, 3! Hugs and love, Denise X.
Well, why has she signed off a YouTube comment?
I don't know, it's weird.
I don't. Do people have a signature on YouTube comments? Apparently they do now.
Chad M says, I just come here to hate on this theme song. The best James Bond theme is from Casino Royale, full stop.
Brilliant.
Jacob Safari says, Chad M, no, Living Daylight's from Aha. Chad M replied, another keyboard warrior trying to make himself look good, fucking puss boy.
Wow. What's going on?
Something has happened here. More
open
replies.
YouTube warfare.
Gregory Decker appears to like it. He says, pretty open-minded for this to be an intro song. It's along the lines of Duran Duran or Aha. Hyena says, not the real song! Gregory Decker says, already listened to it. I'm not sure how that's going to apply. Never mind. Matthew Collins says, awful. 7. This song is much better than that Sam Smith crap. That song is bloody terrible. Already worst Bond song ever. That song is beyond awful. Samuel Smith is great beer, but awful singer. To which Hyena again felt the need to point out that it's not the real song!
Well, he's like the YouTube police, isn't
he?
Like, everyone, look, I think you all need to know this.
Ethan Sermon says, is this fake? To which Foghorn Films replied, I was thinking this sounds like it's a very poor mix. I cannot even hear the singer singing the lyrics, as 'tis a bit of a mess, but that explains it.
You know what I thought about Spectre, actually? I was really disappointed in the theme song. Not only because it's shit, but also, given James Bond's dalliances over the years with all the ladies, they haven't used the rhyme, infect her. what a fucking missed opportunity that is.
Well, I don't know, maybe James Bond, you know, given his job, gets free sexual health.
It still involves a needle down the urethra.
Yeah, ooh, how horrible.
He's at worst, mind.
Yeah, well,
fucking
yeah.
Rope on the bollocks.
Yeah,
his
bollocks have been smashed to smithereens.
Nothing left of his fucking genitalia.
Yeah, he's just like, yeah, he's like, yeah. Oh dear.
Wonder which chat lines are these days. Look, I'm really good with my tongue and fingers, but you're fucked if you're after anything else, love.
Final YouTube comment of the night is...
The Fighting Celt says, "This promises much but doesn't deliver. It's a complete mishmash of nothingness. I wasn't familiar with Sam Smith's work before this, so I come here totally without prejudice. After several listens, I always like to give a new song a chance. My opinion is this, colon. Weak vocal, very poor arrangement, and poorly performed. Just a bad song all round. Put it this way, it will not go down as one of the better Bond theme songs. The writing is definitely on the wall for this one." To which Hyena replies, "Lol, except this isn't the real Sam Smith song."
In your face, that man.
Thank you, Hyena.
Who made that original comment, sorry?
Said The Fighting Celt.
What a prick.
Yeah.
I like the fact he set out his stall. These are my credentials for reviewing this song. I think you'll find there.
Yeah. I listened to the song several times, therefore...
my opinion is counts. 7 times more valid than yours, sir. Good day.
I'm aware of the fact we've just read out a load of offensive comments, but I really liked it.
We love you, Spectre. Can we get free gig entry next time, because I remember having to pay and being quite pissed off. That wasn't you're welcome to my £2 or whatever it was. Okay, well, thanks ever so much for listening. That was our Bond Not Special edition, and we'll be back next time. Don't know when, don't know what it will be about, and I don't even know who will be with me. Hopefully UKIP, will you?
I'd love to be.
God, I've had way too much coffee. Thanks for joining us, and goodbye.
Bye.
Sorry, I just realised the coffee's made my neck muscles go mental.
Are you okay?
No.
Do we need to go to A&E?
Hang on. Oh, that's weird. Right, I'll go back.
And that's why I don't drink coffee. Stop. My ear is bleeding.
What the fuck?
I don't know, I think I just like scratched it.
Oh, I went to bed very late last night. I've signed up to the WWE Network. Yeah, it's free for the first month, so I'm watching as much wrestling as I possibly can before I cancel it. Stop laughing.
Sorry, I didn't realise you were a 15-year-old.
Not the special edition.